Good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorcher. Thank you for joining me on this Saturday, May 19th, 2018. Pleased to be joined in studio by the man, the myth, the legend, Steve Goldman. How are you doing, Steve?
Always a pleasure to be here, Anthony, on this gorgeous spring day.
Well,
he said sarcastically.
It hasn't rained in a while. I mean, we're due for some.
Right. Like, what, 2 days? And it hasn't been, 60 degrees in the last couple of days?
No. Why not? I mean, everybody loves a 50-degree day.
Whatever. Yeah. Good to be inside. Good to talk golf.
Yeah.
So, a lot of stuff going on. Have some warm thoughts with what's going on down in Texas. So
what do you know? What do you say around the league?
Hey, we got the AT&T Byron Nelson going on. Brand new course. I haven't seen it yet. I haven't watched the golf the last couple of days. You've watched what's going on at Trinity Forest. You love the course.
Love the course. It's a... So my guest last week was Michael Clayton, golf course architect, and basically, and then we did another secondary podcast, and one of the things that we had talked about was that the PGA and regular golf courses had become like McDonald's, right? There's a sort of equity and sameness to PGA Tour courses, and the fact that this is different, they have options, people have options, there's strategy involved. And so this is like a little more of a buffet as opposed to the standard McDonald's, Big Mac, whatever you want to call it. That's the PGA Tour.
Well, certainly scoring hasn't been the issue so far,
right?
Because you saw Mark Leishman shoot 61 on Thursday, and we had Brian Gay shoot 62 yesterday, rookie Aaron Wise shooting 63. So, you know, we've got some big numbers at the top. 15 under is the lead right now.
Yeah.
But a couple interesting things. The cut line was -4, which is astronomical.
I mean, there were at one point 90, and part of this is just to the listeners, there was no wind. The course relies on wind. I mean, it's not exactly Chamber. I guess you could say maybe not dissimilar to Chambers Bay, but there was no wind the first day when Leishman lit it up. There was only wind in the afternoon. So actually, there was a little bit, I guess you could say, a little uphill climb depending on the draw, for the certain half of the draw. So they're expecting more wind this afternoon, so it'll be a little bit of a different course.
So we'll see. So the cut line was at -4, and
like 90 guys, right?
It was at one point, but 75 made the cut.
Okay.
But yeah, and unfortunately, Matt Kuchar, one of the people falling below the cut line, he ended with -1, and that ended a streak of 30 consecutive cuts made, which was the longest active streak on the PGA Tour. Ricky Barnes got disqualified for signing an incorrect scorecard. You know how we love that rule. It's amazing how golf just seems to just not care that there's no other sport around where the participants are in charge of their own scoring, where we haven't reached a point where we can't just have some independent person, or, well, we have a machine for, well, we do have independent people, because you've got people that work for ShotLink,
right,
that carry devices,
yep,
and they keep track of everybody's scores, and they're automatically uploaded to the truck, website. And the website. So obviously somebody is keeping track of their score. So why it has to be that we have to wait until after the round is over? And what was interesting about Ricky Barnes is he signed a scorecard. He didn't even know he signed an incorrect scorecard, because it wasn't until later that he found out he even got disqualified.
Right.
But as a side note, he was +3. He was tied for 148. So even though he signed an incorrect scorecard and got disqualified, it didn't cost him anything.
The damage was already done,
because he wasn't gonna make the cut regardless. But
yep.
But still, I mean, it's just one of those things where it's like, seriously, we can't figure out a way to get past this.
Well, in addition to the fact that how many we've had rule changes,
we've had
simplification of the rules,
right,
we've had rewrites of rules.
So they're allowing for technology to help determine if a rule's been violated.
Right.
But they refuse to use technology just to keep score.
Yeah.
I mean, look, you and I, we're both shaking our heads.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's no, listen, only, there's only, there's only a couple of people in this world that know why that's still a rule, and we're not one of them.
I guess. I understand it's a scorecard and you should be able to keep track of your own score, but
yeah, like, I get the sole responsibility, right, of the player and all that stuff, but
it's fine, but it really shouldn't be happening. But anyway, so
yeah.
A link style golf course down in Texas, and warning, folks, here's a segue for you. Another Link style golf course right here on Long Island. That would be Mill Pond, and we have a special guest coming up after the break.
Yep, we're going to be talking with Mike Durrell, the PGA professional there. He is a proponent of the one move to better golf, a Carl Lauren philosophy, if you will. And so looking forward to talking with Mike. But let's take a short break. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit Pete'sGolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm Anthony. He's Steve. And on the line is Mike Durrell from the PGA Professional at Mill Pond Golf Course. Mike, how are we doing today?
I'm doing great, Anthony. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, always a pleasure. Let's start with Mill Pond. It's a link-style golf course, and I like to always go there at least once a year, just a couple times a year, just because I always thought that your superintendent did a really nice job, did a wonderful job keeping the place in great shape. What's new over there at the golf course?
Well, you know, we continue to make improvements.
Yep.
It's kind of an ongoing process with regards to the tees. We continue to improve the teeing grounds, making them larger.
Mm-hmm.
I think the problems when the course was built was that the teeing areas just were not large enough.
Right.
You know, and they get kind of beat up. So we're continuing to do that, continuing to redo the bunkers. Unfortunately, over time, as many courses experience, the bunkers kind of get beat up. You know, if they're not built exactly right, you have stone problems, which is a problem for many courses. Bunkers will wash out. And that's, you mentioned Jim Vogel, our superintendent. He does a great job.
Yeah.
Keeping the course in good shape. But he also does a great job in rebuilding the bunkers. So the ones that we have done, you know, are excellent and really have no problems. So we continue to upgrade and improve the golf course as time goes on.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a, you know, it's people don't understand the time, and obviously the resources necessary, but You never stop working on a golf course. I mean, it's like owning a house, right? You're always doing something. There's always an upkeep on something. There's always an upgrade on something. And so it's just something that you, it just doesn't ever really end.
Yeah, you know, that's true. And technology has a part to play in that. I know the equipment that's come out, the different techniques used. For example, to my observation, our greens continue to get better and better. And
yep.
I know Jim has used different techniques in order to improve green speed and green health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're right, it's an ongoing situation. Sometimes Mother Nature makes it necessary, and sometimes technology just gives us the opportunity to improve our golf courses.
Sure.
Speaking of Mother Nature, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. The weather's just been terrible to start the season, and you've talked about the golf course itself, but I'm wondering from an operational standpoint how the customer base and how I would imagine the lack of a customer base has affected how the golf course has been operating so far.
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, it's we've been hit pretty hard. I mean, every course has. You know, and you just, over the course of a season, you're going to get a certain amount of rainy days. So our hope going forward is...
Let's hope that's
maybe
it.
Starting June 1st, we're
going
to get some really nice weather.
Yeah, we've met our quota, at least, for a couple of months, I think. I mean,
yeah.
Given the spring that we had, or lack of a spring.
Yeah. I don't know where you were, but there wasn't spring
right.
Where I come from.
Given whatever we've just come through, I think we've had enough rain. I mean, it's supposed to rain most of today, and then
yep.
Maybe start to clear up later on starting next week. But, you know, it's hard because then you feel like one of the things that's difficult, or I guess you could call a challenge, is that you always feel like now you're behind the eight ball, right? And you're trying to catch up now, and you don't know if you ever really, once you lose, let's say, whatever you lose, you always feel like, you know, you're starting the race way behind, and it's hard to play catch up with that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it. But it, you know, it's everyone's basically in the same boat. And as I say, you make some budgetary cuts. You
right.
can come back on things now, and hopefully, you know, we'll see some really good weather where we can make up for some lost time.
Yeah. Well, and I think the what helps is also the quality of the golf course you have. The quality of shape it's always in, and so that's always helpful. And you know, people are gonna come to Mill Pond. It's really, like I said, it's a fun track, and it's also always in a well-conditioned golf course. So you're at least ahead of the game in that regard.
Yeah, we seem to have a fairly loyal base of customers, and we're very grateful for that. And you're right, the golf course does drain really well. So
yep.
you know, it could rain really hard today and tomorrow. You know, we'll have carts available in the morning. So
right.
we are fortunate. Yeah.
We're talking to Mike Durrell, the PGA professional at Mill Pond Golf Course. Mike, I don't know if you saw this week, but the National Golf Foundation put out their golf industry report, and I just want to get your reaction to a couple of things, because obviously Long Island is a much more compressed area. There's a lot of golf courses. There's a lot of golfers. And, you know, we're on an island, so obviously it's different. But they released a report that the number of golfers aged 18 to 34 cover roughly about a quarter of the golfing population. And I'm wondering if you're seeing that in your area and Long Island in general, if that seems to be consistent, or is there an issue with trying to attract younger players to come out and play golf?
You know, I've kind of seen some of the reports from the Golf Foundation. I think a couple of months ago they came out and said that the number of worldwide participants went up to 32 million. I was kind of surprised at that number. I think they've started to include people who are using simulators.
Yeah.
You know, anyone who might take lessons. So you know, it's kind of hard to judge how well we're doing. I would say based the things that I look at are obviously rounds played and instruction, how many people are taking lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And at Mill Pond, we've seen an increase in the people taking lessons over the last couple of years. So to me, that bodes well. That particular age group that you talked about, 18 to 34, our increase from what we've seen is more in the younger kids, you know, high school kids, elementary school. You know, we see a lot of six-year-olds actually being introduced to the game. So it's very hard for me to say that, you know, 25% of the people that play are 18 to 34. I know that's a really tough age. People with young families have a lot of responsibilities. You know, I remember stories from members from going back 30 and 40 years ago where guys would play 36 holes on Saturday and Sunday, you know, and then go home Sunday night, have dinner, and go to work the next day.
Yeah.
That does not happen anymore.
No, no.
You know, it's it's hard to say 18 to 34. Are they participating? Yes. Are they participating as much as they used to? I don't think so.
Well, it's interesting you said about golf simulators, because if the trend is moving in the direction that we think it is, eventually there's probably going to be just as many people who play golf not on a course that do on a course. And I find that to be quite interesting, as to, because even though the number of people seems to be increasing, the number of rounds is on the slight decline. So I'm wondering if people are trying to find, let's just say, a different way to play golf, or maybe they're trying to redefine what it means to play golf.
You know, it's a very interesting point that you bring up, and I think a lot of it has to do with time. You know, you can get 18 holes in a simulator much more quickly than you can by going to a golf course.
Mm-hmm.
And then that to me, especially, you know, we talked about that 18 to 34 group of younger people, they just don't have the kind of time that it's needed to get up, get dressed, go to the course, warm up, you know, play 18 holes, maybe have a drink with the guys after now and go home. I mean, there's 6 hours gone in the day.
Right.
And they just don't have that. So I think time has a lot to do with people trying to find other ways to enjoy the sport.
Well, and I think part of that, you know, the people that are upset about the long rounds of golf are also the problem with the long rounds of golf. I mean, I think that people don't really understand, you know, you still have people continuously playing from the wrong tees. You have, you know, people looking 10 minutes for golf balls or whatever the case may be. I mean, it could be tough to play that long. And I just feel like, we'd be better suited to educate people as much. You know, we hear a lot of grow the game initiatives. I feel like we really should be educating golfers on what really causes slow play. And golfers would probably, I feel like the people that are playing slow would be surprised that to even find out that they were the cause of the problem.
Yeah, you know, it's one thing that I'm particularly proud of at Mill Pond. We definitely take an interest in trying to keep play moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we try to set a four-hour limit, especially on early Saturday and Sunday mornings.
Yep.
You know, and as well as during the rest of the week. But, you know, we try to keep people moving along. And you're right. There are certain groups of people who want to play from the back tees and got to find that golf ball and, you know, kind of oblivious to the rest of the individuals on the course. So it's a constant challenge. And, you know, if someone was assured that they would play golf in 4 hours, they may be more inclined to come out and play.
Yep.
But, you know, I guess the prevailing attitude on Long Island is that public courses, you're in for a long round, which is unfortunate. You know, and that's something we got to keep trying to change.
Yeah, it's a cultural thing almost at this point, and so it's very difficult to sort of create a new culture that, you know, like when you go across the pond, people are used to playing fast. It's part of the culture, and here it seems like it's the opposite. It's almost like a sense of entitlement, like, I paid my whatever dollars, and I'm going to find my ball, you know, and I spent all this money on golf balls or whatever it is, and I'm going to take as many practice swings, and I'm going to play, you know, however long it takes me to play is how long I'm going to play. So it seems like if we could just change the culture a little bit about speeding up, it doesn't mean that you don't have to enjoy your round of golf, but there's something to be said by being a little more brisk.
You know, just a quick story about that. We had, it's going back a few years ago, we had a group walk up to the, in the pro shop, walk up to the register to pay for the round, and it was 6:45 it was either Saturday or Sunday morning. And the foursome announced to me and my staff behind the counter that they wanted to play in 4.5 hours and they didn't want to be disturbed.
I like that.
Excuse me, if that's your attitude, you better go build your own golf. That's the only way that's going to happen.
I'm going to try that next time.
I can't imagine anything more Long Island than that.
They walked up there and they were serious. You know, we don't want to be disturbed because, you know, the Rangers come out there and we just want to relax and take our time. Well, not here, not on Saturday morning.
At
7:00.
I could just see them as the Ranger pulls up. Move along, nothing to see here. Just keep moving.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so New York. All right. Well, Steve brought up one of the channels in which the Golf Federation was or Foundation has been using as a metric for growth or the growth of golf, and so and one of them is instruction, and I want to get to your type of instruction, the one move, the Carl Lauren better move, one move to better golf, when we get back from this short break. You're listening to On Paul with Anthony Scorsia.
The oldest distributor of power equipment on Long Island and has been serving the community for over 100 years. We have two locations for your convenience in Riverhead and Hicksville. Malvis Equipment offers a diversified line of quality products for golf, sports, and turf, including Jacobson, Redexum, Vertidrain, Smithco, and Turfco. We also carry Mahindra and New Holland tractors and construction equipment. Visit our website at malvisequipment.com or call us at 516-681-7600.
Owning the latest and greatest golf equipment makes no difference if it's not fit perfectly for your game. At Mizuno, we create irons and woods for all skill level golfers, from our MP18 family, featuring three different models designed for the better player, to our JPX family, featuring three different models designed to give you distance and forgiveness. We have a model for everybody. Visit Pete's Golf Shop and get custom fit for a set of Mizunos today.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining us on this somewhat little rainy Saturday. I'm Anthony Scorsia. Across the room from me, or a table from me, is Steve. And on the line is Mike Durrell of Mill Pond, PGA Mill Pond Golf Course. Mike, we talked about instruction, or we mentioned it a little bit, or Steve brought it up, and I want to talk about the One Move to Better Golf. And, you know, if you could just give us a little bit of the foundation to One Move to Better Golf and your philosophy, or the philosophy that goes with it, briefly, so we can kind of get into the details of it.
Yes, briefly, Mike. Please do that.
All right, I'll be as brief as I can. Well, One Move came about because of Carl Lauren.
Yeah.
Carl Lauren was a very good amateur player. He had success in college. He had success playing nationally as an amateur. And he was looking for a way to hit the ball better. And when he was growing up, when he was learning the game, Ben Hogan was the best ball striker. And even today, you know, people that I've spoken to who've been around for a long time and have witnessed Hogan hitting it, and as well as the players of today, still talk about Ben Hogan as being, if not the best, certainly one of the best. You know, the other two that I've heard mentioned would be Lee Trevino, and I heard Hank Haney mention Mo Norman as mm-hmm. the best ball strikers of all time.
Sure.
So he's trying to figure out how to hit the ball. He wants to play better. And his observations led to an understanding, which I think is absolutely correct, that setup and start lead to the correct setup and the correct start, excuse me, lead to the establishment of four fundamentals. Those fundamentals are axis, swing plane, extension, and windup or torque.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the four fundamentals that Hogan achieved, Trevino achieved, Mo Norman achieved. And so he came to the conclusion that having these four fundamentals in his golf swing would make him a better player. And again, upon further investigation and experimentation, he came to understand that setting to the ball specifically, and there's a definition for that, and starting the left shoulder. I'm talking about right-handed players, and I know, Anthony, you're a lefty.
Actually, but so is Steve.
As am I.
Steve, too. Sorry, guys.
So you're outnumbered right now, Mike, so be careful here.
Yes, I am. I apologize. But as a right-handed golfer, you want to use your left shoulder and start your left shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
When you do that, you establish immediately those four fundamentals. So Carl hit upon this and had success as a player. He ultimately got into the golf business, became a club professional, had a family, needed to make a living, and so it was the natural progression into being a club professional. And over the years, he just developed and refined the system. Book came out in 1975, entitled One Move to Better Golf, in which he had the opportunity to define his findings. 20 years later, he came out with Getting Set for Golf, which was a better explanation of how to stand to the ball and the routine necessary in order to put you into the correct setup position. So the difference between One Move and virtually all the other methods or systems out there is we teach the swing as a whole. We teach students to stand to the ball correctly and give it a start. And basically, if the setup position is correct and the start is correct, all the desired positions are automatically achieved through the swing. So for the student, it really makes learning the game easier. I would admit that as a teacher, it took me quite a long time to develop a proficiency where I felt comfortable, where I could help, you know, pretty much everybody that comes to me. But the One Move system is basically teaching the swing as a whole, as opposed to teaching the swing in parts, which is what we're mostly familiar with.
Now, as I understand it, and I'll just use the term front shoulder, so this way, depending on which side you hit from,
Excellent.
You understand what I'm talking about. So as I understand it, as the front shoulder initiates the swing, it actually makes the takeaway a longer takeaway, because I know, and I can speak for myself, you know, one of the, I guess, the big faults of an amateur golfer is the club is taken back too far on the inside. So by initiating the front shoulder, that helps to eliminate that miss.
Yeah, that's correct. And when I talked about, I used the word extension before as one of those fundamentals, that's exactly what I was referring to. The club is taken straighter back along the target line, if you will. That's one fundamental. When that happens, weight is more easily transferred into the right hip, and now you're able to release the club later, which creates more club head speed. So extension, actually the two fundamentals related to distance would be extension and wind-up. Wind-up is moving the shoulder independently of the hip on the backswing. That first motion is the shoulder going before the hips. But extension, interesting thing about that, you know, I watch a lot of the tours. I watch the men, the women, the European tours, just to see what people are doing, what's going on. That seems to be the fundamental, at least to my eye, that's most violated. It seems to be a problem. People seem to have a problem establishing extension. But the one move system, you know, using that front shoulder, starting that shoulder forward, does help you establish that extension.
What I like about the one move is that, and what I particularly like in how
is that it's only one move,
because it's only one move. But it's one swing, right? And that's what I think is attractive about that philosophy, is that it's trying to keep things. First of all, you're setting yourself up for success at address, number one, and then you're just sort of just starting the engine. And so it's sort of simplified, but not overly simplified. And most people don't. They look at the swing in different parts, and I like the idea that the swing is one motion. Some people, if you looked at, like, let's say Matsuyama, who has almost a pause at the top, if not a pause at the top. And yeah. I don't think golf. And listen, he's a world class golfer. I'm not criticizing him. I'm just saying I think of the golf as one motion. Whether it's going back and forth or whatever the case may be, it's one motion. And I like the idea that people who subscribe and teach one move talk about it as being one motion and not a back and forward kind of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, when Gene Borick and Carl are good friends, and I was most fortunate to have worked for both of them. But when they were being investigated, actually interrogated by Golf Digest back in 75, because Golf Digest introduced the book "One Move to Better Golf,"
right?
You know, one of the titles that was being considered was "Action Reaction,"
right?
And they finally settled on "One Move to Better Golf,"
right?
That's really what the golf swing is, and that's what Hogan basically demonstrated to Carl Orne. It was winding, unwinding, but the unwinding was a result of this one move start,
right? Right.
Okay, so, I mean, the swing takes a second. How many thoughts can you have in a second?
Right.
You know, and I think that's where
I don't. You don't want me to answer that question.
Plus, we don't have enough time.
No, we don't.
Yeah, well, you know, and that is the problem. So many right. thoughts, trying to put things together. You know, and that's one of the things that's so great about this for my students, is we really simplify things. You stand to it correctly, grip it correctly, and start that shoulder.
Yeah, and the thing is, it works almost in itself in the sense that if you think about starting with the shoulder, once you start it almost triggers. Then you don't think about anything else. If you train yourself in the one move, once you start, then you actually stop thinking, because your only pre-shot thought is to get that shoulder started. So I almost use it as a trigger to stop thinking as well. So which I find interesting as a pre-shot routine.
Yeah, that's great that you can do that, because you know, some of my students over time get it, but some of them still hang on to trying to fix something
yep.
in the golf swing, you know, and that just kind of destroys the advantage of just giving it a start.
Well, Mike, we're gonna have to continue this conversation, because I really we love having you on, and we're gonna have you again on very soon. I just wish we had a little more time this week. Thank you very much for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you out there at Mill Pond Golf Course.
Thanks so much. Nice being with you.
All right, that was Mike Durrell, PGA Professional of Mill Pond Golf Course. Steve, always a pleasure, my friend.
My pleasure indeed. Enjoy the weekend.
Take care, folks.